Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio show in the world with over 200,000 listeners in over 80 countries. During the first hour, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Seattle time, I'll be interviewing my good friend Simon Parks live from the United Kingdom. Simon's a fascinating man, and I'm so happy he'll be on my show today. During the second part of the show from 3 to 4 p.m. Seattle time, I'll be interviewing Mary Hansen from the Hiroshima to Hope organization here in Seattle, along with Kiko Nakazuka, whose mother was a survivor from the Hiroshima bomb. August 6th is the 73rd anniversary of the tragic bombing of Hiroshima, and August 9th is also the 73rd anniversary of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki in Japan. Every year on August 6th, the people of Seattle have this beautiful peace ceremony on Green Lake near downtown Seattle for peace so that these weapons will never be used again. It's a wonderful event, and I'll be honoring these people and doing prayers for Fukushima and Nagasaki. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone so much support for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. I also would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, and we're also looking for sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been signing my website and providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course Eric at here at KKNW, both Erics, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And you can also call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. A good friend of mine recently passed away. His name is Wally Brown from Yelm. Please send love and light to his family. There will be a memorial and celebration of life for Wally at the City Park in Rainier, Washington, on Saturday, August 11th at 4:30 p.m. If you're in the area, please come and celebrate Wally's life. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference will be held in Olympia, Washington, from April 12th to the 16th, 2019. We'll have some amazing people, including Aaron Elizabeth of Health Nut News, as well as Simon Parks, who will be giving presentations. If you register before November 1st, the cost for the three-day conference will be just $55. If you're interested in registering, coming to the conference, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or give me a call at 509-750-9793 here in the United States. In addition, this summer, next month, from September 6th to the 12th, I'll be taking a small group of people to Mount Shasta, Telos, and the Hollow Earth. I've been sponsoring trips to Mount Shasta and the Hollow Earth since 2016, and it's a wonderful opportunity to visit the Hollow Earth. However, you have to follow certain spiritual protocols to gain entry, and if you're interested, please email or call me. My email again is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. When I was in Mount Shasta just last month, and several of our groups physically saw Sasquatch. One appeared manifested in the third dimension. He looked at her, and then he disappeared again. He went back into the higher dimensions. It's an amazing place. We all interacted with the people of Telos, and we also all saw UFOs flying around the mountain. One amazing thing that happened when we were there last month is that the Sasquatch visited our campsite, and they created a beautiful paste mandala made up of the branches of tree branches and pink rose quartz crystals. They tell me that these crystals actually came from the Hollow Earth. The cost is only $200, and if you'd like to come, please send me an email. With that, I'd like to have my good friend Charlie, Crystal Spirit, on the program for a few minutes. Charlie, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, Ted. It's good to hear from you again.
Well, good. It's great to talk to you too, Charlie. Charlie, this is a leading question, but what's going on at your wonderful Crystal Spirit this weekend?
Oh, we're having our Healing and Intuitive Arts Fair this weekend, where we're going to have about 13 or 14 different people that are going to help people with readings and all kinds of things.
Cool. Cool. And I'll be there, too, giving readings Saturday and Sunday. And, Charlie, for those people who don't know your address, could you please give it out and your web address, too?
I would love to. It's 3802 South Cedar Street, Tacoma, Washington, 98409.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Charlie, thank you so much for coming on today. And if you're in the Seattle area or Portland or Vancouver, Canada, and you're looking for something to do this weekend, please come down to Charlie's Crystal Spirit Center. It's not really it's a bookstore, but it's a lot more than a bookstore. They have all kinds of healers there and readers, and I guarantee you'd have a wonderful time. And Charlie, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Ted. Have a great day.
All right. You take care. Take care. With that, I'd like to welcome my good friend Simon Parks to the show. We're trying to reach him now. Eric, I'm sure we'll bring him on in a few minutes. Oh, good. He just came on. Good. Simon, are you there?
Hello, Ted. Yes, I'm here.
Good, Simon. It's great to see you. We're on both the radio today and the internet and also YouTube. We just started that service 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So we've got as many media sources. Now, if I can contact my friends in the Galactic Alliance and they can broadcast your interview galaxy-wide, then we'll have a large audience, a really large audience.
That would be wonderful.
For your interview. Well, I have this script where I always read about your background, but if I read the whole thing, it would take the rest of the hour and then we wouldn't have any chance for questions. Except to say that you're an amazing guy and you've been in touch with benevolent extraterrestrials your entire life. Your family comes from the security services in Britain, and you always have interesting things to say. So with that, I'll just summarize it saying that, Simon. And how have you been, by the way?
I've been fine. Thank you, Ted. It's been 3 weeks. It seems that we've been away for ages. We just had a vacation, so we were away for a few days.
Oh, good.
And, of course, we work on the number of Sundays in a month. There were 5 Sundays in the last month. So, we didn't have the radio show. It's been 3 weeks, I think. So I thought, where's Ted? It's time for that radio show. So that's really good. So everything's fine. Everything's okay.
Good, good, good. Well, I told everyone, people were asking about you, Simon, and I wrote them all back, people who were sending me questions. I said on the air a couple weeks ago, I said you were having a well-deserved vacation, which you've recommended to me several times in the past year to take. And I have managed to take some time off. I hope to take more time off next week and go to the ocean again. But one thing I wanted to tell you, I had Zora from the Hollow Earth and his son, Billy, Bay Woodard, on the air a couple weeks ago. And he said that the people of the mermaids and mermen are actually showing themselves more now along the coast as the planet's vibrations rise. I don't know if you have any information on that, but that's kind of a fun thing to think about. I wanted to share with you.
I don't have any information, but I'm not surprised because they are under the water or with the water, and they would want to connect with those beings on the land. I think they're incredibly cautious, but with the vibrational rate increasing, they're probably, taking, I say a risk, they're chancing it a bit more by trying to connect. Listen, I had one of my clients a week or so back for my vacation, and I forget her name, and I probably wouldn't say it anyway, but she was one of the people that came on your Mount Shasta tour.
Oh.
Yes, and she was telling me that what was really interesting was the crystals that had been found in the morning on the floor.
That's right, the Sasquatch.
And she was very, very impressed with that, actually.
Ah, wonderful, Simon. I know for the sake of privacy, I do know who you're talking about. There are several people on my tour who actually called the Sasquatch in and asked them to construct a peace mandala, which they did, and they created a circle. I'll post it on my site. I'll have it posted this coming week, but The Sasquatch created this beautiful circular peace mandala made of twigs. In the middle of it, they put a bunch of mostly rose quartz crystals, some clear. And then they've also put the crystals at the base of 7 trees around the around the Mandela, and it was for world peace. And I talked to the telepathically communicated with the Sasquatch when we were there, and I asked them where they got the quartz crystals, and they said, "Oh, we got them from the city of Telos, which is of course beneath Mount Shasta." And so it was a very special event, and I'm so happy they did that for us.
Yes, she this lady, was very impressed with that. So she really thought that it was great, and she did actually say that it was very reasonably priced, your experience. And you know, she said there were other things, people were doing other things 5, 6, 7, 8 times the price you were charging, but she really felt that yours was the best.
Oh, well, how kind of her to say that. Thank you, Simon. I charge like $200 for a week of camping at the mountain. I pay for the camping sites. We all pool our resources and get organic food. But I know there are some people, I'm not going to mention any names, of course, who do charge a lot more for the same things. And when you charge a lot of money for a spiritual experience, I mean, that's fine if you've got expenses, but sometimes I think people charge too much and they make it into a profit motive rather than a true spiritual experience. But such as it is here in the third dimension, you know. So,
sure.
You know, but...
yeah.
Anyway. Anyway.
So listen, you said, Ted, I think on a text to me that you had lots of questions coming.
Yep.
So I'd be quite keen to crack on with those and see if we can answer some.
Okay. All righty.
Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Because people were expecting you to come on a couple of weeks ago when you took your trip. And so the questions kind of piled up. But I'll get the oldest ones first.
Okay, great.
Let's see. This is from a gentleman in Beijing, China. And it's asking about ayahuasca. I don't know much about it, but he writes, is drinking ayahuasca as dangerous as smoking it in terms of gin possession?
Right. That's a very good question. It's not the ayahuasca that's the problem. It's the people who organize it. And namely, you would go to South America or a few other places where groups, you know, advertise this and you get a group of 7 or 8 people and they do it. If that group has been taken over by negative entities, then where they're operating from becomes a haven for negative entities. And I have not first-hand experience, but second-hand experience. One of the women who was interviewing me some 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. she'd gone to South America for a ayahuasca experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she recounted to me that she just woke up, she didn't know what happened, and she woke up in a pool of blood on the floor.
Oh my goodness.
And other people recount that the entities were sitting on the roof or the ceiling mm-hmm. and dropping onto the backs of people. Now, when you take any form of mind-altering drug like LSD or ayahuasca, what it does is it takes you into their world. Mm-hmm. So when you go into their world or you get close to their world, you obviously go into their playground. That's where their strength is.
Ah.
And negative instances, they wait for people to congregate and then they try to attach to their bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's not the taking of ayahuasca that's the problem, it's the organization. There are some organizations that offer this service that are completely in the control of negative entities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer. That's a good question, thank you.
I was actually in Cusco, Peru in January, and I went to a market in Cusco where they sell ayahuasca dream catchers. And I was with another psychic at the time, and I asked him about it, and he said, don't buy any because from that particular vendor, there were negative entities attached to the physical ayahuasca plant that was made part of the dream catcher, not to buy it. So I didn't, but anyway.
Ted, that's excellent, because that's just backing up what I'm saying, that mm-hmm. If you look at a negative entity,
mm-hmm.
it could spend its time going from one location to another location to try and find people. Mm-hmm. Why not take control of an organization which is going to bring a bunch of people together? It makes your life a lot easier, doesn't it?
Right.
So that's what, they're not all taken over, but there's quite a few that are. So please be very careful. If you're going to do this sort of thing, try and get some personal recommendations from other people who've been there.
Sure. I've just received another question, a follow-up to this one. Actually, it sort of fits. She writes, what about Ouija boards? Now, I've heard people, I've never used them myself. I've heard people getting attached by negative entities from Ouija boards. Is that sort of the same kind of...
It's the same in the sense that it's... I've always referred to a Ouija board as the Trojan horse. Mm-hmm. We accept the fact, I think most of us, that very bad people got into positions of power in the developed countries. Mm-hmm. And it's no coincidence that in high school or college that the Ouija board was almost part of the furniture. It was pushed in. Let me explain how the Ouija board works, and then our listeners can, you know, really think about whether they've got one and what they want to do with it. The concept of a Ouija board did not come from this world. The concept was given to humanity by beings from not the fourth dimension, but the interdimensional space. That's the space that exists between our world and the fourth dimension. And it was designed as a device that would bring in or allow these creatures to freely enter our world. You see that the contracts that exist, it's very difficult for one being from one reality to come into another one. Mm-hmm. Specifically, if you're a negative entity, you have to be invited. Mm-hmm. Now, what they'll do is they'll use a Ouija board, and any person who comes within 3, 4, 5, 6 feet, you don't have to use it, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet of a Ouija board.
Right.
It's like if you can imagine that the Ouija board is the shop window. Big store, mm-hmm. in America. And you look in the shop window and you say, well, I like the things on that shop window. So you open the door and you go in and you have a look to see if you want to buy anything. The Ouija board is the shop window. When you put your finger on the glass or whatever it is to activate it, mm-hmm. that's you opening the door. So from their perspective, you have come into their world. You have seen the Ouija board. You've tried to make it work. Therefore, you've gone into their world. And if you're psychic, a channel opens, and they're all like yellow cabs, these demons. They all queue up, and it's first come, first served. So the first one in the queue comes through and will try to attach to the most psychic person in the room. Now, when people use a Ouija board, they usually say they want to talk to somebody or have questions answered. The problem is that because it's not a pure device, that's why it's tainted. It's not like someone who's channeling a pure force. That's completely different. We're talking about a physical device that was constructed for the absolute reason that an entity could come through and attach. Now, when these entities attach, they'll attach to a person and maybe be dormant for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Mm. And then they'll activate. So please don't use a Ouija board, full stop.
I had a long time ago, it must have been about 15 years ago or more, I met somebody who actually played with Ouija boards when she was a small girl. And then now she's an adult, and it turned out she had this negative entity attached to her that more or less completely controlled her life. It was very difficult to get through, and I don't know what ever happened, but it can happen. So for those of you out there, it's safe to say that stay away from Ouija boards, and if you have used them in the past, it would be good for you to contact Simon, me, or a good psychic out there who can help you get rid of any negative attachments or entities.
Yes, I think that's great. Probably 10% of my clients picked up these things from a Ouija board right back when they were anything from 12 years old to their early 20s. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the major point. And the difficult thing is that that these beings can be dormant for many years and then activate. And slowly but surely, they try to take that person over. And it is difficult. So, yes, you know, if people think that's them, they can get in touch with you. And if you've got your hands full, then I'll take a few off you.
Oh. Well, thank you, Simon, for the compliment. Well, whenever I deal with a negative entity, I always bring in the heavy guns as much as I can, because you really need all the strength you can to get rid of them. And you also, is it fair to say too, Simon, you have to have the agreement of the person you're working with that they genuinely have to want to get rid of them too.
Yes, I mean, sometimes some of my clients think they want to get rid of them, but they don't. Mm-hmm. In which case, I say, look, you come back to me when you've really made your mind up. When I use the word good, I don't mean it's a bit of a misnomer here. Mm-hmm. Perhaps I should say a capable black magician will always have one of these demons inside him. You see, to create what people call magic, and I would just call science, mm-hmm. to create that in a 3D world, mm-hmm. most people need an element from the other world to negate the third dimensional heaviness. So a black magician will carry one of these entities with him, and it's a quid pro quo. In other words, the demon gives the black magician the gifts and powers to do magic, mm-hmm. but in return, mm-hmm. the demon takes from the black magician. And I know of black magicians who so despondent, so miserable, so trapped, they'll just sit, in the dark. Mm. No lights on, they just sit in the dark, and they're not happy people. Yeah. And also those who've been infected with these things will also often sit in the dark and be very depressed. Mm-hmm. So it's a heck of a business, and people don't perhaps realize the depth, certainly in the United States of America, just how many people have got this issue.
My goodness. Well, we've talked about this before, about how this is a time of ascension, Simon, how the vibrations of planet Earth are rising rapidly. Do you think as these vibrations continue to rise rapidly, Simon, that these negative entities simply will not be able to stay here any longer?
I think they'll be one of the last ones to go, simply because by being inside a human body, they are not protected, is not the right word, but these particular demons, they are like a chameleon lizard. And what I mean by that is mm-hmm. they can alter and change their frequency to that person they're with. That's why people can't detect them. You scan your body, or if you're a bit psychic, or they're not aware of them, because these creatures take on your persona. They take on your energy so that it's like a part of you. Mm-hmm. Now, from the perspective of the Earth's energy frequency rising, mm-hmm. it doesn't have the same effect, because these beings are part connected to the person. Mm. So in a certain way, it's not such a big jolt. If one of these things was just standing on, you know, Madison Square, then it wouldn't be able to last very long now, because, as you quite rightly say, Ted, the vibration is such mm-hmm. that negatives can't really hang about too long. But by connecting to a person, they get some protection, and that's one of the reasons they're doing it now.
I see. Interesting. It seems like the negative elements on this planet, I think they realize that they've lost the war, but they're doing everything they can to hang on. Is that a correct observation?
Yes, what they've realized is that there's no way can they turn the clock back. Mm-hmm. What they can do is try to slow things down, or they can try to find, not a loophole in the law, but sometimes we look at it like that. But they'll try and find ways that just give them that extra day here, or that extra hour. So they'll do things that drag out, rather than face the reality of it and try and come to the table and have a discussion and, you know, try and change. Mm-hmm. They're just in blind panic now.
Huh. Well, it's about time. It's about time. It's about time. My goodness. Well, Simon, I have to ask you, this is another question actually from fellow who just returned from England, where you are, and he says that the chemtrails here in the United States seem to be decreasing, but when he was in around London and out in the countryside recently, there were chemtrails all over the place. He's asking, what do you see the future of chemtrails worldwide and also in Britain?
Right, he's absolutely right. Since you've got your president, they have by and large reduced. You can't say that they've reduced in every state. Mm-hmm. But if you, from the evidence that I'm getting, people from many states of the US are messaging me, letting me know, mm-hmm. I've never seen such a reduction as we've got at the moment. So I think that's broadly because you have a president that is not part of the cabal.
Right.
You have a president who doesn't go around to them for private conversations. Therefore, they're finding it harder to find the money. They're finding it harder to operate. And they don't want to do things that bring them under his attention because he will do something about it privately.
Right.
So I agree that in the United States of America, there is a significant reduction. It's not stopping, mm-hmm. but it's reducing. In the United Kingdom, we have a present leader who is part of the control system. So, yeah, they're still going on. Any country that has loads of chemtrails, it's because your leaders are not effectively doing anything to stop it.
I see.
Bottom line.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, I have a lot of people listening in England now. That was an interesting question he asked. I have another question by Jay. I'm not sure where Jay is, but he writes, recently there's been several features on television about driverless or autonomous cars. It's been suggested that if used widely, they could increase safety, etc. But taking driver control out of the hands of the individual seems ominous to me. Moreover, one source mentioned that 5G technologies is needed to run a network of driverless cars. Can Simon please comment on why driverless cars are being promoted and whether this may be one of the reasons for the push to introduce 5G technology?
Right, when these driverless cars were being tested, originally they were not working because they weren't using enough cameras in the car.
Mm-hmm.
If you were on a negotiating a bend, because of the way the cameras were mounted,
mm-hmm.
they were not getting a depth of perception, and therefore there were some serious crashes. And what they did to overcome that was to place more cameras in. Over the last 25 years, whether it be the metro or driverless cars or anything else really, we've seen a push to removing the human operator from the machinery. Now, the argument we're given is its cost effectiveness. I don't believe that is the driving force. I think it's part of a plan to force people to accept automation. I think it's part of a plan to say that the robot is more trustworthy than the person. Mm. Now, that flies in the face of humanity because, you don't have an aeroplane that goes up there and flies all the time. You have autopilot, but that is when you're up off the ground and you're flying on a straight course.
Right.
To take off and landing, there isn't an aeroplane in the world that carries civilian passengers, to my knowledge, that would have automation for taking off and landing. They would have to ensure that there was a pilot on board.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what is the insurance on these cars that don't require a person to drive them? What is the insurance?
Mm-hmm.
And if there was an accident, how do you say whose fault it was? Because if it's a computer fault, it's just a nonsense. I honestly believe that technology should be there to make our lives easier. I do not believe technology is there to do away with us. But unless we're very careful, these technologies will be used as an argument to do away with people, except at the very highest level. And that's something we need to make sure never happens.
I have to share this with you. I mentioned it before, I think a couple months ago, but I think it's worth saying again, Simon. When I was in Peru visiting Cusco and Machu Picchu in January and February of this year, when I was leaving Lima Airport to come back to the United States, they had this huge billboard. It must have been, my goodness, 30 feet long by 20 feet wide. It was a large rectangle. About Huawei, I think it was a cell company out of China, and they were saying, this is the future. In other words, a Borg-like entity that wasn't a man who wasn't really fully human, and he wasn't fully machine. It was this mix between machine and human. And he was holding up this cell phone where the guy was half machine and half human. I don't think that's our future, but that's
what... No, it isn't. No, Ted, it's not going to be. And right. I would compliment the advertising company for doing us a great favor, because nobody in their right mind would look at a half-human, half-robot device selling a cell phone and think, I want to be like that.
Right.
So I expect their sales of cell phone drop dramatically. The other part of the question was about 5G. It's not necessary to have 5G to control these vehicles. 5G is not that sort of carrier wave. It's for communications. It's not for something like a standalone vehicle. So the 5G won't be used. They won't be piggybacking, for another word, they won't be piggybacking signals to a motor car like that. 5G is something completely different.
One thing I will share this with you, Simon, is that one thing that David Icke told me when I visited him on the Isle of Wight in May was that the reptilians they've had China as a playground for them ever since the West isolated them after World War II, and now they've greatly influenced the way the Chinese government is, and it's been kind of like their playground. And so you get this. It's no accident, I don't think, that this company is from China, and they're promoting the benefits of AI and a machine-like human that interface that's not human. It's not fully machine either, but it's just half human, half AI entity.
I've got the highest regard for David. Like, I've never met him. I was so pleased that you were able to get some time to meet him. I have never met him. There is a reason why dragons are so strongly represented in Chinese and Japanese culture. Certainly with the Chinese, there is a strong reptilian type history to China that goes back a very long time. So yes, that is one of the other reasons that China sees itself as separate from every other country on the planet, and why the thinking in China is that they want to dominate economically every other country. So if I was, I'm not, but if I was a reptilian lord sitting in China, I would say, well, we'll try and dominate the world through these people. Right. In other words, we will use these people as our puppets to get what we couldn't get ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the plan. And there's another reason why President Trump is trying to put trade barriers on China to make it harder for them to get money in, because a lot of that money is being siphoned off and used for other things.
Interesting. I was at a UFO fest. I missed your presentation at the fest. I got up late that morning. I'm so sorry, Simon. I know you gave a Skype breakfast to everyone there. But I ran into Carrie Cassidy, and she was giving a presentation where there was a fellow named, I believe his name was Eddie Page, who he says was part Pleiadian. Are you familiar with him and his work, Simon?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, he was saying that he saw the Chinese invading the U.S. by 2028, but I don't see that happening. I think the timelines have changed and we're entering into a period of peace now.
The problem I have with that is a very physical problem, is that unless you've got a huge portal, from a physical point of view, don't see how you would. You think about D-Day, when American, British, Canadian, and Australian troops landed on France to liberate Europe from Nazism.
Right.
It was the biggest armada in history. I don't know how many hundreds of ships and boats and airplanes there were.
Right.
That would be detected. If you're going to invade a country, China's a long way away from the US.
Right.
You'd have to get a huge flotilla of ships, and the Americans would spot that before they even left port. Mm-hmm. So the only way you would work is if you had some form of technology that allowed you to open a portal mm-hmm. and literally deliver hundreds of thousands of troops. So I don't think that's going to happen
no.
at all.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I don't pay attention to doom and gloom anymore because I know the timelines have changed. Here's another question we just came in. Carolyn in Olympia, Washington writes, she wants us to say some water prayers for what's happening in Florida and your take on the release of green algae into the ocean, which is causing red tide and killing off the wildlife.
Yes, I'm aware of it. I'm not yet decided on it because we've had such an unusual, not just a weather pattern in terms of winds or hurricanes, but across Europe and parts of the States and other places, there have been this very strange heat, mm-hmm. which has brought in parts of Britain jellyfishes in with the beaches that have never seen jellyfishes. Suddenly got jellyfishes arriving on their beaches.
Oh my goodness.
Seaweed that some places have never seen before. Mm-hmm. This green algae, I believe, is part of the change in the atmosphere, or at least the climate. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that is an artificial, I believe it is artificial, this climate alteration that's going on.
Right.
So I don't believe that this algae is carrying anything poisonous. Mm-hmm. I think it's to do with the very strange climatic conditions that are happening since, to be honest, about April or May of this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, actually. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We've had a phenomenon happening here in California in the United States, and Carolyn mentions about why. Well, there's also been fires in Greece too. And
yes.
it looks like, and she writes, I haven't seen the footage, but I'll mention it to you. It looks like vehicles have been zapped by energy weapons, and it's the same kind of phenomenon happening in California where, Simon, it's the craziest thing. You'll have a so-called forest fire, and the authorities say that it's so-called natural. I'll put quotes around natural. But then only the houses are burned, or the cars are only the cars are melted. And then all the vegetation around the houses and the cars is intact. And then, after we had fires like this down in California last year, the local authorities said that people couldn't go in and rebuild their homes with the insurance money. Instead, they wanted them to go to cities like San Francisco or Los Angeles under Agenda 21 and live in these little cubicle apartments. I'd love your take on that.
Yes. I've seen the photographs of vehicles in a line completely burnt. The official story is that the fires were traveling at 50 miles an hour mm-hmm. and overtook the vehicles. I was immediately suspicious to see lines of vehicles as if they'd all been neatly parked mm-hmm. In the middle of the road, completely burned.
Right.
I have been made aware that the burning is what I would call uneven. Whether it is what the person is asking, an energy type weapon,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's, I'm going to take us into another realm here, rather than an energy weapon fired from a satellite,
right.
Take us into another realm now, a consciousness that visualizes a dwelling, a building, apartment, visualizes something and combusts it, but doesn't visualize just outside of that building.
Hmm.
Looking at a computer connected to a person. So in other words, just as a psychic can sit at a table and say to someone standing 10 feet away from them, you are holding the deuce of clubs. And then that person says, well, how did you know that? Because I'm not holding the card to you. And they say, well, I can just see it. In the same way that person could visualize it, it is possible with fairly recent technology to do that. Now, I'm not saying that's happened here because I haven't got the evidence.
Right.
But I am saying that this uneven burning, which your person's right, this was a previous fire last year, there was the same pattern where you've got a number of homes in a semicircle,
right.
And the grass is untouched, or some trees are untouched. Now, the moving, the Agenda 21, that's important, we'll cover that. Mm-hmm. There is this evil pattern going on to move people away from places where you can be self-sufficient,
right.
Places where you can escape, places where the system can't watch you, and put you into the city, which is nothing more than a sacrificial environment.
Right.
So these cheap two-up blocks, and I've seen them, I know what they look like,
mm-hmm.
The emergency accommodation, which suddenly becomes very permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So you get moved to an emergency accommodation, but you find yourself there 10 years later.
Right.
And originally designed for Africa or places of an earthquake, but it's very interesting that they're being used in the U.S.
Well,
so I think all of that is incredibly evil.
Well, I know I have a lot of listeners in California, and for those listening in California, and this if this is these fires, these directed energy beam fires, have happened to you and you've lost your home, and you go back and you've got the many homeowners have insurance so they can build another structure. If the local authorities refuse to let you, I would just go ahead and do it anyway. Who cares? Because if enough people stand up to them, they won't be able to stop everybody from reclaiming their land and building their homes again.
I think it would be very, very interesting from a wider perspective to get the local authority to explain why they were refusing it. Now, if they were saying because it could be burned down again, if it's a free country and you choose to build your house there,
right,
you know, why would the government take charge and say,
sure,
we're not going to let you build there? So I think it would be very interesting to get the reasoning behind it.
I will try to do that on a future program.
Right. Thank you, Ted.
I'll try to do that on a future program. Here's another question that came in about, you have a post on your website posted today or yesterday. August 2nd, Legal & General, a household name in the UK, known to millions, has some of its customers have been cheated out of millions of pounds. And it wrote that it seems like since the banking crisis of 2008, absolutely nothing has been learned and not much has changed in this most greedy of business sectors. And I can give you a couple of comments that I've received on that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, basically, what's happened here in Great Britain is that three employees blew the whistle. Three employees went to what we have is, I think it's the same as you guys, it's called the Financial Standards Authority.
Yeah.
And three employees of Legal & General, some time ago, but the news only just broke, but
mm-hmm.
some time ago went and reported that they were very uneasy about what was happening.
Sure.
And that it is being investigated. So what I wanted to try and get across to people was that after the 2008 Lehman disaster, we had about 2 years where all of these financial people just hid themselves. And then when they thought that it all died down, they just went straight back and did what they've always done. And that's what I was trying to get across, that there hasn't not much has changed. Therefore, we could have a similar thing tomorrow.
Well, I hope eventually there will be some serious house cleaning done. I know this happened in my own family, Simon, where my grandmother passed away in Canada, in Alberta, many years ago, and her estate was managed by the RBC, Royal Bank of Canada. Turned out, we discovered some years later that her estate was worth $1.3 million, but the bank itself only probated $39,000, and they kept the rest illegally. So the police actually been investigating it for quite some time, and I think eventually there will be some arrests made, because I think this is a time of truth. But they kept it hid all these years.
You see, that what that shows is, it just take away the shock element of it, just take that away, and let the audience just think about this. Somebody in a bank was so confident,
sure,
that they could break the law like this and get away with it. Now, you only do that, I guess, you only do that when it's your 50th time, your 100th time, your 1,000th time. You've done it so many times,
sure,
you don't even think about it. So
right,
rather than get shocked, let's think about it, that this particular whoever it was are so used to doing it.
Right.
And that's what's so shocking, that organizations that we think are there to help us and support us are actually just there to rip us off.
Right, right. This happened back some years ago when I think people trusted institutions more, but the bank itself, I've asked them about it, and all they've done is stall me. They refuse to give me any information. I think eventually justice will be done. So like,
it has to be done because that's illegal. I think in your country, that I know it's Canada, but must be a felony, surely.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That amount of money is a felony, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So the reason that it's taken so long is because somebody's been protected by somebody very high up.
Right.
You know, if two dudes go in to a bank with a gun and they steal £1 million, they're very quickly caught and locked away because there was nobody protecting them. There was nobody,
right,
you know, high up in government or wherever, looking after them. Banks have those connections at the very highest level.
Right.
And they slow down police investigations. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a challenge. We'll have to talk off air about it sometime.
There are
things I could tell you, but not share them. You have another post on your website from July 28th, and I want to run this by you because it's really fascinating, where you just had seen an interview where Buzz Aldrin at a space convention is asked by 8-year-old girl, Simon, and the little girl says, why has no one been to the moon in such a long time? And Buzz replies, we didn't go there.
Yes. I mean, I was sent that.
Uh-huh.
That I didn't say it was, you know, either genuine or fake or what have you.
Sure.
But I put it up because it opens the debate. It opens the debate up about why A, humans have not been back to the moon. It's not a case of money or technology. Surely things have moved on since 1969.
Right.
Why we didn't go back? I mean, one of the things we were told about was there might be rare metals on the moon, resources, build a living quarters out there, and we could mine for this and mine for that.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to all that? Why didn't that happen? Mm-hmm. And then there's the other a very interesting possibility that in 1969, you know, people did not go to the moon in the way that we're told. I'll just quickly say that, you know, and I have talked about this before, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but
there may
be new people that haven't heard it. In 1969,
mm-hmm,
there were only two radio telescopes,
mm-hmm,
in the world that could detect anything landing on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
One was in your country, the US, and guess what? The other one was in my country, Great Britain. That was called Jodrell Bank.
Mm-hmm.
That was the name of the radio telescope, Jodrell Bank.
Mm-hmm.
The only two telescopes who could verify if something had gone from the Earth to the moon and back again. And it is a fact that the National Security Agency got the clearance. They came in, sent all of the British employees home, all the technical staff home, and the National Security Agency basically sat and manned Jodrell Bank during the period of the moonshot. And then when the NSA went and the Brits came back in again. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, I guess you'd do it because you wouldn't want anybody saying that something didn't quite make it as far as the moon. So regardless of whether the Buzz Aldrin one is real or a hack or fake or what have you,
right,
I put it on there because this is a debate that still needs to be had.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, Simon. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left, Simon, 6 minutes, and I wanted to ask you what What do you, some more interesting things or things that you see happening this month or this summer or this year?
And if you're about America, haven't you? Cause
no, not necessarily. It can be anywhere.
I think it should be.
Okay.
Well, this is the vacation period.
Okay.
You've got your Supreme Judge getting into position. The President of the United States came and visited the Queen of England.
Right.
And kept her waiting, was late for his appointment, deliberately, not by much, but he was deliberately late.
Oh, interesting.
Because he wanted to show the world that, you know, he wasn't going to do exactly what he was told. Very respectful, not rude at all about the Queen, but she was a little bit late. There's a lot of lies going out at the moment, but I can tell you that one of the journalists who was present actually saw the Queen of England looking at her watch. She was wondering where the president was. Now that's unheard of. Presidents and the Queen, it's just unheard of. I just thought that was so funny.
Interesting.
So you've got a period of calm now in the US. Mm-hmm. Don't be too stressed about this business with North Korea. The bad guys are now saying that North Korea is going to renege on the deal, still building nuclear weapons. Look, This is a hardball. Your president is playing a very, very, very difficult game of cards, and it's a long haul, but it will get there. In other words, they're not just going to roll over and say, yep, there you go. It's not going to happen like that. There will be a lot of brinkmanship. Mm-hmm. But it's in the North Koreans' interest to come to peace now. But it doesn't mean that they'll just give in easily. There'll be a lot of hard play to be had, and your president is very good at that, and he has a pattern, you know. He really says some bad things about you, and then just before he's going to meet you, he says some really nice things about you. and then he meets you. Now world leaders are not used to that. They're used to the script that was written by the same person that writes their script.
Sure. Right.
Person that wrote your script writes his script. We all know what everyone's going to say,
right?
And all of and our ties are all in the right position, and the shirt's nicely ironed, and we sit, and the chair's been organized exactly where the camera, because the camera knows where we're going to sit.
Right.
All orchestrated, like something out of Hollywood. Not with Mr. Trump. Nobody knows what he's going to do, mm-hmm. where he's going to do, where he's going to sit. And that's very refreshing. And to a certain extent, that was the same with President Kennedy. Kennedy used to change his routine and change the way he would do things, and he was different. So I'm not saying that Trump is Kennedy. What I am saying is that Trump has learned from Kennedy that you've got to keep people guessing.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible observation. Here's a question that just came in. We've got a couple of minutes. It's probably the most important question of the day. When will McDonald's come into North Korea, and will it be serving kimchi?
Right. That's a serious question. And the serious question is that the Americans have been very careful not to name a company. All they've said is a hamburger restaurant. I don't know why you guys call a hamburger joint a restaurant. To me, it's a hamburger bar, but uh-huh. I guess that's the corporate name.
Sure.
To me, a hamburger joint is not a restaurant, but never mind. From Britain, and we're different here. Mm-hmm. But they haven't said McDonald's or Wendy's or Wimpy's or whoever, but they've just said hamburger. It's got to be McDonald's, hasn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yes, I think McDonald's will open in mm-hmm. North Korea. Absolutely. And will other interesting North Korean foods come across? I'm sure they will. You know, look, when I was a politician, we would get visitors from all over the world, and they would come with their national flag, with things that are very special to their country, and we would do a swap. They would hand us their flag, we would give them our flag. This is exactly what's happening. Instead of flags, you guys are exporting McDonald's or burgers, and you're going to get something back. It's just politics, that's all it is.
Sure. I remember this quote, you probably remember the author, Simon, but where goods and services don't cross, armies will instead. So I'm glad that North Korea is opening up to the world. Well, Simon, Thank
you. Lovely to speak to you and your audience, Ted. It always is.
Thank you so much, Simon, for coming on today. It's always a lot of fun to talk to you, and I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks.